To serve this past distance 2,000 groups, Concord currently serves 5,000 members. He is heavily involved in the city of Dallas in numerous capacities, including serving on the board of Dallas' Habitat for Humanity, Harmony CDC, Herd Bridge Builders, and mentoring Brother to Brother. He's a graduate of Oklahoma State University with a B.S. in secondary education, and a graduate of Dallas Theological Seminary with M.A. in Christian Education. He is the author of a devotional book entitled Great Expectations. Pastor Brian Carter and his college sweetheart, Stephanie, have three children, Caitlin, Kennedy, and Carson. After their location, Ms. Kate Olson, I'll leave this in the place.
Let us pray. Dear Lord, we thank you for the blessing of another day. We thank you for being creator, healer, provider, sustainer, deliverer, and keeper of all. And we thank you, Lord, because you are great and mighty, strong and awesome, worthy and holy, our source and our sustainer. And Lord, we thank you for this opportunity to come and pray, because you said in your word that we ought to pray for our government and our leaders. And Lord, today we come praying for our mayor, Mayor Mike Wallace. We pray, Lord, that you would give him wisdom and knowledge, direction, discernment, and strength for this assignment. Lord, grant him the courage to lead this city well. And may you allow him to have a great impact for the betterment of this city each and every day. And Lord, we come praying for our city council. We pray for each of them, Lord, that you would give them grace to serve well. And Lord, we pray that you would grant them integrity, wisdom, knowledge, strength, and stamina to serve this city with excellence. And that you would be proud of how they handle their assignment to serve this city. And God, we come praying for all the boards and commissions, the task forces, and the other entities connected to the council. Lord, we come praying for our city staff, our police force, our firemen, and all of our public servants that make this city great. Lord, we also come praying against corruption and that integrity, high character, and morals will be the order of business in all city business. And above all, Lord, we come praying for a spirit of unity in this council. That there will be no divisions by special interests, nor North Dallas versus South Dallas, nor personal agenda. But God, grant them a common passion for the best of the citizens of this city and beyond. We want to be a great city, Lord. So Lord, please use everyone at this table and surrounding to do great things. Lord, we deeply believe that we can do big things, that big things do happen in Dallas. But God, we know we cannot do anything without you. We love you, we thank you, and we honor you. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.
Thank you, Madam Mayor, for the opportunity. Pastor Carter, I wanted to say just a word to you. The Concord Church is in my district. I am very, very proud of the work that you and the Concord Church are doing. Your leadership has made all the difference for you. And the Concord Church is making a difference in that community and throughout the city of Dallas. You're making a difference one life at a time because you truly do grow people. And that is what the Lord intends for us to do, to grow and strengthen individuals. Colleagues, you should know that Pastor Carter was selected by the late E.K. Bailey to lead the church and has fulfilled that mission extremely well. Pastor Carter, thank you for what you're doing. Continue to manifest God's kingdom in our time. Thank you.
Pastor Carter, you might want to stay up at the podium for a minute. Mr. Carroll.
Oh, thank you. Pastor Carter, the great Concord Missionary Baptist Church, the voice in the home of this community and Linda Barbie and all of the folks that we know.
Okay.
Edna Pemberton, I mean, it's been so many folks from your church that have made contributions and continue to make contributions to our city and to our community. And that, you know, when they say the fruit don't fall too far from the tree, well, that's only because you all are involved. I want to ditto and echo what my esteemed council colleague has said about Concord. Granted, I have 264 churches in my district alone. But when you have one church, such as Concord, that stands out, it only encourages me to go back and encourage our churches to follow the lead of great things that are happening. In your prayer, you mentioned praying for Mike Roberts, our mayor. I was actually saying, wait a minute, now you're not doing all this by yourself. But selfishly speaking, you included the entire council, you included the entire staff, you included our police department, you included every service of the city that's working here. And a lot of folks don't do that. And I want you to know that prayer was heartfelt and it warmed my heart. And it's a prayer that I felt that the city needs to hear. And coming from you and your leadership, I welcome it. And I just say I'm going to come to your church now. And when I come to this district, I'm coming into your district. And be real clear, to the church. And I'm going to come on now. And when I come, I'm coming to worship. And I just want to say thank you for being here.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. I'm Miss Jackson.
Thank you, Dr. Carter, for being there. And you have fulfilled your mission, Dr. E.K. Bailey. I remember when I'm on Pope and coming to another church, and your church was I guess you were a leader in the community, the Church of Concord. It's not all just about rushing, it's about giving to the community. I know during Thanksgiving, a whole lot of people don't realize that you come to Cyclone City Mall and give away a complete turkey dinner to anyone who qualifies to come there. And we do a thousand, we do a specialist, and we do not ask for anything in return, but giving. And one thing I like about Concord, y'all give so much, is a person or a church give so much and do not expect anything back. And that's why I think Concord is one of the leader churches throughout the city, especially at Gideon Home on that. And I know we got a big opening coming in, and I make sure I get an invitation to the big grand opening to the new church here. So I will move in. And thank you very much for being here.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Deputy Miller and Lynette. Thank you, Pastor Carter. Thank you very much, and welcome again to the City Hall. Thanks for all you do. Today we'll have one special presentation. It was by the Councilwoman Von Stilton Steele and the Stone Duck Pleasant Grove Mitchell. Thank you, Andrea. During the 6 years that I've been on the council, it has been my good pleasure to serve a portion of Pleasant Grove. I started my campaign in Pleasant Grove because the people of Pleasant Grove did not know me. The people of Oakwood knew me. The people of Pleasant Grove did not. I have found the people of Pleasant Grove to be warm and special. And because of that, I said to Madam Mayor at one point, I want to do something to draw the Pleasant Grove community together. She said, well, why don't you have a festival? Therein was the seed of our huge community festival called Grove Fest.
the last Grove Fest that we had this October culminated 1 month of activities called Stand Up Pleasant Grove. We started with Grove Fest, but it grew to a month-long celebration with food events. I'm recognizing people today for Grove Fest because that is the event that I had the privilege of originating and that I continue to participate in. I will not have another opportunity to meet you as a council member for the next Grove Fest, but please continue to stand up like it grows, and please let Grove Fest continue to be the culminating event that brings the community together and brings out that 3,000 people that we've been able to bring to that corner. I'm going to ask Mayor Pro Tem McDonald to come and help me with the certificate. And as I call your name, Pleasant Grove, I want you to come forward. These are leaders, these folks sponsored all of Stand Up Pleasant Grove. But I am especially thankful, as I said, for your sponsorship of Grove Fest. The presenting and title sponsor is Blake Ingram. Mr. Ingram? Blake Ingram is a former council member. He's a former council member from Sunnyvale, and they're applauding because of all that he does out in Pleasant Grove. Didn't he start the food pantry?
Blake Ingram started a food pantry
out in Pleasant Grove. That food pantry recently received $17,000 in donations. It is making a difference in the lives of people in Pleasant Grove. He owns Auto Cities, Dow Powell, Bill Stockton, and Tina Boyd are here. Bill Stockton is the operations director and Tina Boyd is the human resources manager. Dow Powell is a huge organization, but they are a magnificent corporate partner in that community. The media sponsor is Lieberman Radio. The general sales manager is Annette Colon Avilis. And Rafael Cartagena is accepting. Rafael, would you come forward, please? Let me try to turn the microphone. A second radio sponsor is Radio One. The vice president and general manager is Jill Spurton. Jill, come forward, please, and accept your certificate. There's somebody coming with you. Who is it? Mark McCoy, operations manager. A platinum sponsor of Stand Up Pleasant Grove and Grove Fest is Southeast Jewelry and Pawn. Joy Bosberg is here. Joy's husband is also here. Thank you, Southeast Jewelry and Pawn. Those are printing, represented by Gonzalo Gordinez. This present. Please come forward. Another platinum sponsor is Access Self Storage. The owner is Doug Hunt. Last year, Doc said, "This looks like a good deal." And so Doc joined us last year as a sponsor, and we especially, when we initially started the Grove Fest, we had it at the Pleasant Oaks Recreation Center. Doc allowed us to use the Doc stations, and that helped us to grow. Doc is here this morning through its Community Relations Director, Lawrence Meachack III, and Matt Thompson. Is Matt Thompson here? or is it just Miss Denise? Miss Denise, all right. Of the Denise family. Good to have you at City Hall. The process and the out of the box book is produced by the producing partners, primarily out of the box management and design owner Keith McKee. Keith, please come forward. Keith has produced this event since the beginning and has done an exceptional job. Southeast Dallas Chamber of Commerce, Paul Wayne this year. Southeast Dallas Chamber of Commerce was hard in Pleasant Grove to bring businesses out and to bring recognition to business owners. The Kiwanis Club of Pleasant Grove, represented by Susan Wells, is present, also a producing partner. Lance Coco is not in the house. Lance is the owner, with his father, Norm Coco, of the Levine Department Store in Pleasant Grove. We have put another shopping center in Pleasant Grove, but prior to that, Lance's store was the one graduate store there in town, and they supplied that community in a marvelous way. When we put the new shopping center in, I said, "Now, Lance, aren't you happy about this?" He said, "Well, I'm not quite as happy as you are because it's competition, but he is gracious about it and contributes in a strong way to that community." He was the campaign organizing chairperson. And I want to give special recognition to a young man who wrote a song for Stand Up Pleasant Grove and Grove Fest. Kevin Finley wrote the song Stand Up Pleasant Grove. Kevin Finley, I need you to come over here. He is also known as Tay Ross. Now, they wanted to do a video, and I said, "I'm not going to do that, because I got 18 of y'all. I'm going to call up here and talk about every one of you, and the council is going to be saying that this is going to get done." So, I'm not doing a video. However, Tay Ross is going to sing a bit of her song, Stand Up Pleasant Grove.
Well, I'm not a singer and everything, but stand up, everybody, and Sugar PG, discover what I did, you get so proud of me. I know you don't want to, but trust me, you have to. This is our future, and what we adapt to. That's the quote.
Thank you, Kevin. This is what this young man is saying, is that you're proud in Pleasant Grove and of Pleasant Grove. People keep saying he's forgotten Pleasant Grove. Long Hill Hill did not forget Pleasant Grove. I will not. I have to move on, because that's how time moves, like the mighty Mississippi. You have a new representative after May of this year. But it has been my good pleasure to spend time with a warm and wonderful community. I love you all, each and every one. The Lord be with you. The Lord stay fire upon you. Let the Lord be the wind at your back, the light in front of you, and the friend that you find. All the best. Thank you.
Well, I feel just as well. Yeah. And Holly's here on the trip, right? Mr. Kelly.
Thank you, Desmond. And let me start off by saying to Pleasant Grove, and I'm glad that you all are all here. Collectively, I want to say that you've had tremendous representation as related to the Grove Fest and meeting and keeping things positive in Pleasant Grove under the leadership of Councilwoman Dunfield Jones Hill. You are represented by four of us,
here on the Dallas City Council, President of myself, Councilwoman Davis, Deputy Mayor Tanell Atkins, and Ms. Hill. That's very important because Pleasant Grove has been broken up into all four of us representing for so many years. I want to also say that it has been my pleasure and a commitment, and Carl, you can attest to this, that years ago, when I first got elected, I had to make sure that the folks that I represented knew that there was a need for Pleasant Grove to have a solid voice. And one solid voice that could speak for all areas. Ms. Davis represents part of Buckner Terrace. I represent the other part of Buckner Terrace and Pleasant Grove and the Hill as the heart of it, and Councilman Deputy Mayor Tanell Atkins has another portion of it. And when you have a collective group such as yourself, and all of you do not live nor work and have businesses all in just one particular area, you all spread it out, you all touch all of our districts. It is very important that we consolidate the voice of Pleasant Grove. Hopefully, what has been done, and respectfully, the hard work that Ms. Hill has done to collectively bring to the attention of Pleasant Grove in conjunction with this new redistricting process, I too am saying goodbye to Pleasant Grove. I had to sacrifice my area of Buckner Terrace, in which they love me over there. I hope they still love me at Buckner Terrace, but to go and accept a new challenge. But had not for those moves, we would not be sitting here with a new consolidated voice for Pleasant Grove. I encourage this body that's standing before us to be involved with the upcoming election for the voice that's going to replace the voice that we've had working so very well for us. This is your opportunity to choose whom is going to be the voice at Dallas City Hall coming up this May for that newly drawn district that we fought so hard to provide for southeast of Dallas. It is now into fruition. It will take place in May. And do not let all of the work, do not let all of the hard sweat and work in a tearing down that luxury motel that's finally on the ground over there, do not let all this work disappear. Do not let all this enthusiasm and all of the commitments that we have collectively put on Pleasant Grove go down the drain. It's in your hands for you all to continue the legacy that has begun for the Pleasant Grove community. So I want to say that. Thank you, Ms. Hill. Thank all of you. You've been admonished and you've been encouraged to be involved and to make sure that this hard work does not just dissolve. Okay? Thank you, Deputy Mayor.
Yes, madam.
Thank you. I would like to thank each and every one of you for what you presented and put out and the way you helped the community to become better. This is what quality of life is all about in our community, and it takes folks like you to make it good. And what you've done is nothing but giving them a better situation in their community. And you come from all over. And I just got to say, I know one of the gentlemen here, Mr. Hunt, Councilman Hunt. He was a councilman at Midlothian, is that right?
Rosella.
Okay, right next door. But anyway, he's a current city councilman. He's got one from Sunnyvale that's still involved in what we do in our community. So, and you guys come from all over to build a community. So thank you so much for what you do, and it is worthwhile. You've done a great job. Thank you. And I promise you that Doug Hill will still keep having an eye on you. You are. Thank you.
Good on. First 12 years of my life was spent on Death Oak Street right behind John B. Hood. So the Grove is in my DNA. It's, again, that first 12 years of my life, and oh, it was just a really great time. I love the Grove. And Councilwoman Hill, you've done them proud. And you always use that word proud, but you left off one little thing before that you usually use. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about when you describe how proud you are of Pleasant Grove.
I always thought it was so cute. You always say peacock proud.
And I always peacock proud, babbling beside myself and how it happened.
Well, there you go. And I feel the same way. So thank y'all so much.
Hope that passes on the heels, you know. Dwayne said and John Phil said that they were left as a role in the dishes and new dishes, but I'm still there, and I think Councilwoman Davis is still a part of Texas Grove. So we still will be watching Texas Grove and to make sure Texas Grove is still a part of the city. And I think that Sal and myself, you know, when you start at the beginning, you're going to be there at the end until the end of the election. And we're going to be looking at that new Thompson Cook who will be Texas Grove who could work with us. But now, you know, he was out there this past summer in Grove South. And we were talking about Texas Grove, and I feel honored and shout out to the Texas Grove Chamber to invite us out there to say, hey, we need for the city guys to listen to us and the people who live and work in Texas Grove. And I think this city council has listened to Texas Grove. We talk about the golf course, we talk about the Texas Cross Court, we talk about Audubon, we talk about building. We are listening to you. Believe us, we are listening to you, but we still need your help to make sure that we grow Cousin Roll and make sure Cousin Roll is not a stepchild of the city of Dallas. It would never be a stepchild of the city of Dallas. It would always be part of our family. And as long as Mike Smell is here, we know we're going to be able to sponsor to support you. Again, thank you for sponsoring us. Mr. Obama, please.
Thank you very much, Deputy Mayor and Councilwoman Jones Hill. Just much kudos to you. When we spoke 6 years ago and she said you wanted to do something in Pleasant Grove, I said get something that would involve the community, that would you would communicate to the community, and that a united community does many things that all come together. You do a lot of things, and you do great things, and I think I've just missed one Grovefest, but this one was pleasant. I got to meet a lot of young people that have gone to each and every one of the events, and I mean, you just involved everyone, from the littlest, tiniest one. I think I saw one was in a stroller, a few of them were in a stroller, to just all ages, and that's what you want to do. You want to communicate, you want to definitely get people involved, and you definitely want to make sure that the base, the business in the community, makes sure that we support the businesses as well. So, Ms. Hill, leaders in Pleasant Grove, congratulations, and a double done. Thank you.
Anyone who would like, anyone on the council who would like to join us for pictures, please do so. We are in the Grove and stand out. We are in the Grove and it is Morgan. Madam Secretary, Council members.
Good morning. Your morning speakers will begin with Richard Sheridan, Ed Morgan, Molly Rook, Zach Craighead, and Sandra Pinshaw. I'll now recite the speaker's outline. Citizens and other visitors attending the meeting of the City Council shall observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any person making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks, or who becomes boisterous while addressing the City Council or while attending the City Council meeting, shall be removed from the room if the sergeant at arms is so directed by the presiding officer, and the person shall be barred from further audience before the City Council during that session of the City Council. Individuals are allowed 3 minutes of speech. You will notice the timers on both walls. When your time is up, please allow the next speaker their turn. And also, please address all comments to Madam Mayor Medrano. First speaker, Richard Sheridan.
Yes, good morning. My name is Richard Sheridan. I live at 3022 Forest Lane, South Texas, and I appreciate being here. It's a special time of the year, and thank God for Martin Luther King Jr. Where would we be today without him? Recommended top 10 2013 Dallas priorities. I believe I'm representing some awakened citizens. From 10 down to 1, like David Letterman, the order to be debated in terms of priorities. Number 10, conduct a series of open forums on the LGBT issues and establish a diversity commission. I understand most of these issues as both my sister and mother-in-law were lesbians, and a close friend of mine is a bi man. Both sides of this issue have valid positions, and one good way to reach a compromise is possibly a three-step program, A, community forum throughout the city, B, establish a diversity commission, and C, our mayor and city council will then deliver on whatever else Dallas may or may not do to protect the legitimate rights of the LGBT community. We cannot rush this important issue. 9, initiate a street vendor program. New York is doing it very successfully. There's a great need for nutritious fruits and vegetables in the poor areas of Dallas where the supermarkets in South Dallas. Again, New York has a lot of street merchandise, fruit vendors selling their wares, selling their arts and crafts, and that'll get people off the streets, lessen our burden, welfare costs, social costs. Initiate true economic development of South Dallas, grow South Dallas people. How about a spring conservation corps in South Dallas instead of raising homes? How about we go in and clean them up, pick them up, paint them up? And also a job program where we train, job training, and help in funding, and then mentoring program. Investigate the politically corrupt and racist activities with Dallas Citizens Council. Stop the lie of the Cherry River Project. Conduct all elections by paper ballot. Vote fraud is real in this city. Seriously address the deaths in West Dallas from lead poisoning. A three-part series in the front page of the Dallas Morning News, December 16th, 17th, and 18th, begs the question, why is an inordinate amount of people dying in West Dallas? 2 or 3 times the average mortality rate. How's all the homeless? It's pay now, pay later. We are paying twice the cost, 3 times the cost in the jail, and in the health care costs in the homeless. We can do a much better job, and it won't cost us any more money. Develop a true and effective ethics code. We've gone through 2. Actually, we're still into another one, the second one, with the town, in terms of corruption, major corruption in the city. So the next ethics code that may not have happened. And last but not least, Donald Trump might even say this. I think the people might say this. We need to fire city manager Mary Sue, and City Attorney Tom Perkins, and this city is going to go down the right path. Thank you very much.
The next speaker is Evan Morgan. Matt Pleasant. Molly Rook. Ms. Rook will be followed by Zach Cunningham and Sandra Crenshaw. I'm Molly Rook, 5825 Palm Lane. I'm conservation co-chair of the Dallas Sierra Club. I appreciate the opportunity to speak about gas drilling in Dallas, an issue that has many people very concerned and upset. Some of that outrage spilled out at the last city planning commission meeting, and it looks like the outrage is growing. It's clear that some of you are struggling to try to satisfy the gas drilling companies, which have paid millions of dollars for leases, by trying to push through SUPs before carefully considering the gas drilling task force recommendations and writing a new, more protective drilling ordinance first.
The cart before the horse, and it's not likely to produce a good outcome. I know that you're in a difficult situation due to deals made based on incomplete and misleading information provided by gas industry representatives to city staff and the council years ago. It may have looked like easy money to some, but in retrospect, the deals weren't so good after all. The many negative impacts and costs of unconventional gas drilling and production are now increasingly well documented, especially in urban areas. It's a heavy industrial and risky activity that is inappropriate in our parklands, floodplains, near soccer fields, schools, golf courses, and residences, as is now being considered for Dallas. It's definitely not sustainable development, which in the city of Dallas is supposed to include protecting the health, safety, and welfare of Dallas residents. Please don't let the money that Dallas took for gas leases lead you into making decisions that hurt its future. The Sierra Club's position for years was in favor of natural gas as a bridge fuel. I'm sorry to admit we accepted $26 million in donations from gas drilling companies, which may have delayed a clear-eyed reappraisal of our position. As we started hearing from impacted people and from scientists increasingly about negative consequences of unconventional shale drilling, we rejected further industry donations. Now we're unhindered advocates for adoption of stronger regulations. Because current state and federal regulations are inadequate, it's critical that local governments adopt and enforce strong ordinances. Dallas should do this based on new information since the leases were signed. Don't let money taken and inflated promises of future money cloud your vision, impair your judgment, and lead to poor public policy. I urge you to do what's right. Your constituents and their families are counting on you. Thank you.
The next speaker is Jack Cohen. Mr. Cohen will be followed by Sandra Kinshaw.
Hi, my name is Zach Trahan. I'm at 6017 La Vista Drive, 75206, and I'm with the Texas Campaign for the Environment. Thanks for this opportunity to speak today. I also would like to speak a bit about gas issues. I sent you some information about this earlier in the week. Back in 2008, when these leases were being signed, Mayor Leppard and the council were given a briefing by city staff, and it clearly showed that there would be no drilling sites on city-owned parkland. That was spelled out in black and white for all to see when this was being presented to Mayor Leppert and the council in 2008. Also, after the leases were signed in 2008, the Dallas Park and Recreation Board voted on a resolution that said the same thing, that there would be horizontal drilling underneath Dallas parkland, but no drilling sites allowed on Dallas parkland. So something has changed, obviously. The proposal has morphed in the last few years to where now they have drilling sites that are shown on city-owned parkland. And this kind of bait and switch, it causes concerns for the future. Because now what we're being told is that, okay, there are drilling sites that are on parkland, but it's not in an active park. It's not on land that's being used as a park in those swing sets and playgrounds. And there will be no drilling sites allowed on active city parks. But that sounds the same as it did in 2008, when we were told one thing about the use of the land, and now being told something different. So we can't go any further down that hole. We need to stick to what was presented when these leases were being signed originally, what the mayor and council were told then should still go now. Also, the compressor station is a huge, huge problem. This is something that not very many folks, I think, in this building know what the compressor station is, what it will be doing. Really, it's a miniature gas refinery that's meant to take away things like hydrogen sulfide, take liquids out of the gas, process it, refine it, so it can be sold in the market. And that's a major industrial facility that, if it was permitted and built in Dallas, would instantly become the 10th largest source of air pollution in the city of Dallas, that one facility. This is not what we had in mind when we started working on this. The current city ordinance on gas drilling doesn't really address compressor stations. The task force recommendations don't really address compressor stations. This kind of facility wasn't envisioned in Dallas. Lastly, I had some letters to distribute about the Dallas Zero Waste Plan, the long-range solid waste and recycling plan, and how the current kind of public input process that's been happening in January is really inadequate. There have been a couple of community meetings. There's another one scheduled for January 26th. But there's been a real lack of public input on this because zero notice was given. It was put in locations in far-flung areas of town. They're just, it's, right now, this body called for more public input on that solid waste plan. Linda Krupp specifically spoke out about that, Ms. Grayson as well. And it's, right now, it's not happening. And it needs to change between now and January 26th and between now and when you adopt this kind of short-term plan to solve this new segment. So I squeeze in at the end. But thanks again for your work on the issue.
Thank you. Is that Ms. Krupp? Thank you. Just one sec to that. Okay. I'm doing mixed messages on this because I agree with you. The public notice in the paper was three meetings, one at City Hall, one at Timber Glen. I'm not sure. I can't remember the third one. It was in the 7 o'clock. Okay. But in addition to that, there are several subgroups that have been meeting. So are you saying that that's not adequate? I'm sorry, I'm misunderstanding you, because there's a whole series of levels of public input that we're getting. One level is the public, the general public at large, if they want to come. Another level are the interested parties. And so I'm not understanding exactly what you're saying, which one you're saying is lacking.
I think both are, honestly. The stakeholder meetings that you're talking about that happened last week among industry groups, recycling businesses, solid waste companies, and environmental groups, those were also lacking because they were meetings amongst like minds, and there's been no discussion between different groups, between different interests on this issue. Like, there's been no attempt to get all of us, like, people that may have conflicting viewpoints on these issues. Like, for instance, the one proposal is to have an ordinance for apartment recycling in apartments and condos. So the apartment association leader, Kathy Carlton, and folks in that industry, has not been brought into the room with folks who are for that kind of ordinance. And that's planned for January 26th, but if that's the one and only opportunity for these different interested parties to be in one room together, that's really inadequate.
I don't know if they could ever come to a conclusion on that. You know, I mean, I don't know that there is a conclusion or a compromise, but I do think it's worthwhile for at least one side and the other to hear what the other side has to say. I don't know that there's been a compromise. So, manager? Why don't you think we can't address what he's saying? I know exactly what he's saying because when I've been briefed on it several times, and I do agree that a compromise between businesses or interests really is perhaps may not work, but at least to hear the conversation, I think is a good thing. So can we do that? Oh, of course. Hi,
Corey. Oh, good morning. So, I disagree with the part that was missing here. The fact is the meeting on January 26th is to do exactly what you just said, which is to get all those folks together. Additionally, we're going to reach out to get better attendance, advertising in different papers.
Okay, so let's work on a little bit more. The one thing that you could do on the attendance thing, because I noticed the notice in the paper for the general public, is to send it to all the council members so they can send it out.
That's on others to do as
okay.
well.
Okay. So that a lot of times helps a lot. You know, we'll do a blast email. And council members, if you'll send it out through blast email from the offices, that would be very helpful.
All right. We'll get a memo. We've got a total of seven meetings. One is Carter High School, one is Timberland Rec Center, and individual meetings at different locations. Lincoln Property hosted a meeting. There's a great deal of participation with the building owners and maintenance association. So we've had a great deal of input. I just want to stress to all those folks who participated in this process that we appreciate their participation and we look forward to a greater attendance on January 26th.
Okay, and another thing that you can do is to get all the council members the number of meetings that we've had.
We'll do that.
And how many more meetings we're going to have so that we can all know that. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Grayson.
Thank you. Linda?
This is just what I was talking about at our committee meeting when I was trying to kind of explore how we would do this and get the public involved and give the different interest groups an opportunity to actually talk to each other. And I got to say, for us, I don't think one day is going to do it in a general setting. I think that Zach is referring to was something more like opportunities, not in a, you know, huge public input setting for, and not just for one day, for these different groups to come together and actually see if they can work towards some sort of solution that would both sides could agree on or that could be wrong. And did you say that the are we going to have another one at Timber Glen?
We don't have another one scheduled at Timber Glen. But I want to comment on the first part.
Yeah.
We did reach out to a number of groups. In fact, the Texas Campaign for Environment Act group was scheduled. We asked them to host the meeting, actually. They didn't host it, and we appreciate that. He did attend the meeting, and we're encouraged that he will get as many people as we think we need to hear different viewpoints.
But did his group, for instance, sit down and meet with the Apartment Association on apartment recycling?
That question was asked in a number of meetings. We haven't done that. The answer was on January 26th, Saturday, here. And we need to have that meeting before we can have additional meetings. We would have everyone together. Anyone who's interested.
Not just one day, we're
going to
do it more than one day?
Well, we want to finish the schedule that we set out on, and then if we require more meetings, well, we'll do that.
What kind of attendance is there at the Timber Glen Center meeting?
We had about four committed citizens that showed up. It was very rainy. It was cold out, but, you know, that was the attendance.
Well, you know, Timber Glen Rec Center is in my district, and while I was pleased that you all had a meeting there, it is on the tippy-tippy northwestern edge of the city. It's right by Carrollton, okay? And so
that was part of our plan, to be very far north and as far south as we could to make sure.
Well, you succeeded, because you said that you know, a few blocks away is Carrollton.
Right.
So, And it takes a real effort to notify people early enough that they plan to come to a location that is
right.
And I know I myself, especially in my district, I think that meeting was on a Monday night. I saw the notice in the paper on Friday or Saturday.
Well, I actually have the advertisement. I had it on my desk because I wanted to make sure that we covered all of the topics that the committee gave us, which is to make sure that it was advertised, it was well publicized. And so we're saying today we did a great deal and willing to do more. But we're not ready today to say that we're done. We've got a full day scheduled for January 26th.
Well, of course, I think seeing it in the paper 2 days before the meeting or 3 days before the meeting is not adequate notice, isn't nearly enough notice. So I would hope that we would do a better job next time. If you plan on having more meetings, that you get more advance notice and do what Ms. Coop suggested, which is get that to us as council members so we can distribute it to people.
We will do that. And I just want to stress to all the groups that did host the meeting that we appreciate their work. Kroger Stores, Lincoln Property, a number of businesses and folks that participated. So I don't want to say today that it wasn't a good job. They really reached out to help the city and participate.
Well, I think we could do better.
I agree with that. We could do better.
Thank you, Ms. Grayson. I'm Ms. Hutt.
Thank you. First, I had a couple more questions for you. At these public meetings that we've had so far, how many have we had?
Two public meetings and a series of meetings with folks who were just interested in a particular topic.
Okay.
And I'll get the details to the council today on the summary of those meetings.
And beyond the summary, I'd like to know the attendance.
Okay.
At each of those, because if we're getting something like four people or six people, that is not the type of conversation. That's the type of conversation that will allow us to go forward and say, look at us, we hold public meetings. It's not the type of conversation that will really inform the discussion.
And in fact, we want to prepare to stand here today to say we're done. We've got to make sure we get to January 26th. It could be to fill the chambers.
I understand. At the same time, I think there's a difference between public hearings where you allow the public to come down, they say their piece, And the fact of the matter is, we know what a lot of these folks are going to say. We know what the apartment association is going to say on one issue. We know what you guys are going to say on one issue. There's a difference between having that type of public hearing where your staff sit back and hear from everyone and having a conversation. And if it's possible, beyond the January 26th meeting, what might be productive and something that I think we should consider is having a much smaller meeting with representatives from different groups to have a closed door session with a discussion. And some people might not like the idea of a closed door session, but the fact is,
I
understand, but there, sometimes people want to be less compromising in a public setting than they might and have a more candid discussion behind closed doors if we can get a dozen or two dozen people behind closed doors to have that conversation.
We will work to do that.
So that would be my suggestion to ask. That might be helpful as well.
Since we got Mr. Trey in here, part of my to-do list today was to reach out and say, since he's advertising the Dallas Weekly, the Dallas Morning News, via a number of papers, we wanted to ask, and we'll do it here, certainly tell us where else you think we could advertise to reach.
And we put those on the front of our website as well every time we meet.
On the front page, but we put it on the website as well as reach out to a number of homeowners.
Let's put it on the front page of the website, because someone shouldn't have to dig down several layers to figure out where they might look for a possible meeting.
So we'll do that and consider the ask tab if you want to help us advertise. We really appreciate the help.
Well, it was on the front page of the website, and
so we got that.
And it's good that it's advertising these different media outlets. But for the two public meetings, or the community meetings, for instance, just like Sandy, our group found out about it less than a week before, and if that were given to Sierra Club, Molly, to other environmental and recycling advocacy organizations, they'll be able to help publicize and help advertising as well.
I agree with that. But the circulation numbers for the publications I just listed are strong. And it's just one of those issues where let's keep working at it.
Can we get the next meeting a good week and a half publicized, week and a half, 2 weeks beforehand?
Yes.
Comments later. Thank you. Paul, can I ask you one question, please? With the meeting for do the citizen come back and get you to let you know whether you like to have a meeting there, or is it staff selecting the meeting place?
Well, in this case, we reached out to a local vendor who's worked in the community, knows Dallas, knows Southern Dallas, so we're working with staff. Not just staff, it's good for
us. That's all I want to ask.
Okay.
I think it would perhaps help if you would ask those individuals who have a key interest or concern about gas drilling to ask them
on solid waste,
what would you like to see us have the leaders ask?
We'll do that.
Okay. Like I said, and so look at one vendor to tell you perhaps in another area, because it's obvious it's not working with this one particular vendor. And so, I would like to get some.
And this is not our end. We think that so far the progress has been good. In fact, the feedback that we've gotten from most of the groups is that they were encouraged that Dallas was actually having these meetings. We got great comments. We'll share that in the summer.
Well,
so we can do better, but I want to, for all the folks that volunteered and hosted meetings and put in the effort, we want to make sure that
you know, and I know, it's not the main concern. You have those individuals who are really, really, really concerned about what has happened. And so, you gotta get to both.
We'll do that.
Okay.
Thank you,
Mr.
Harris.
Mr. Taylor.
Thank you. Let me just suggest, and this is Forrest, Mary, Benny, and Joe. what we probably could do in addition to the advertising, speaking of advertising, seems my ear. When we are, we have our own television station here in Dallas, as well. I know a car occasionally will run some little stuff on that. But while we're waiting and people are anticipating council meetings to start,
And while they're waiting, instead of saying the meeting is going to start and wait on that, let's run those flows in which we'll talk about meetings for such as the topic we're speaking of now.
Okay.
And let's run those on our television.
Okay.
And let's also reach out once again to our agreement and relationship with Clear Channel, so that those electronic billboards that are everywhere.
Okay.
So we can include those in our in possibly in our market. Let's make sure we touch every area that we have available to us. And even if it's something as important as gas, then maybe stick a little map within in the gas deal. How about gas deal? I mean, we send out to all of the customers that have nothing to do those people, okay? And the water bill.
Yes,
okay.
Mr.
Taylor,
very point.
Okay.
Very good point. So one more speaker, please. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Turner. Senator Crenshaw.
The mayor of Dallas called for public support to fight against domestic violence. Outraged that a black man killed his white wife. However, when put into public record at this month, wrongdoing by members of this city council, the city attorney, the city's police department, there is 10 state units at this trial. In 2003, Hidden Valley Homeowner Association, acting at the advice of the FBI and the ATF, called for federal intervention into the investigation of the firebombing of a home in our neighborhood. The then police chief declined and covered up, and DFD covered up the offense. Our police chief at last council meeting was showered with praise for reducing crime stats. But praise, members of this council, does not erase injustices, even those that are covered up and unrecorded. Today in public record, Hidden Valley NIA asked the city council to request that the FBI reopen the 1431 Quartet firebombing, request that the Department of Justice Office of Civil Rights investigate the execution-style murder of Marcus Phillips in 2011, and the aggravated assault of Isaac Carpenter beaten unconscious in broad daylight on Martin Luther King Boulevard at a facility of public accommodation in 2012, and reported to the Dallas Police Department by a credible witness. And later, those allegations were investigated and sustained by another state law enforcement agency. But the city did nothing. We'd like to ask the City Council to call for the Texas Rangers to investigate the criminal and civil rights violations committed by a member of the Dallas Police Department against a victim accused of car theft. These types of crimes committed by the government in the 20th century, firebombings, execution-style murders, beatings, and this council looks the other way. Fracking of the dust prompted more action from this council than crimes and offenses against persons. I've asked Councilman Carraway to tell me about the legal action that is taken against the property owner at 825 Union, and I have not gotten a response. So I'd like the mayor of this city to see if you can respond to those allegations as well. And certainly, this is a serious appeal to the city council to ask for these investigations. Thank you.
Madam Mayor, this concludes the morning speaker.
Thank you.
Item 2 is a consideration of appointments to boards and commissions. This morning, there's only one individual appointment. Suzanne Smith, nominated to the Landmark Commission by Councilmember Hunt. Ms. Smith fulfills the special qualifications of having urban history experience. Mayor McDonald, your vote is followed.
The next briefing is a briefing by John Terrell, or Terrell, Director of Commercial Real Estate at the Dallas Fort Worth International Airport Commercial Development Land Use Plan. He also serves as Mayor of South Lake. Is he present?
Good morning. Thanks for the opportunity to come to the council and give you an update of what we have going on in terms of commercial development and land use plan at the airport. I do want to recognize Mr. Ken Cannon and Mr. Bill Ritter, who are two of our executive vice presidents, as well as special recognition for our board member, Mr. Horace Smith, who is integral in the workings of the airport and provides great direction to us in all areas, especially commercial development. Just very quickly, I did want to point out that the land use plan, you are very familiar with land use planning as a city. The airport has had a land use plan in place since prior to its opening back in 1967. So several years before the opening in 1974, land use planning has been in place. We update our land use plan, much like the city does, about every 5 years. The last plan that we updated was 2007, and of course our most recent 2012, which is what I'm here to talk to you about today. And you can see the evolution of some of the land use planning over time. This is just a quick photo to show you how our land use plan works. As you know, we have 18,000 acres approximately out on the airport. This specific commercial development land use plan is more centered around the ancillary and lands on the perimeter of the airport, and we have already identified 12,000 acres which is set aside for the long-term operational uses of the airport. Definition, I probably don't need to go into that, but this is not a zoning document. This is a guide to the future of how the airport should be developed, and we go to great lengths to work with our surrounding communities and the owner cities to look at that. It is really to provide a pattern for that development and what is the character, make sure that we have a lot of work with our surrounding host cities to make sure we don't do anything that's in direct conflict with the types of developments that they have. Just very quickly, I'll go through some of the changes from the 2007 plan to the 2012. They are not huge in scope, but as you look at, we had a number of land sales and acquisitions, so the land mass in the airport actually changed. We had a significant number of acres that were sold to TxDOT as a result of the connector project, and the new land use map represents the new land boundary for the airport. Additionally, we had market information that was given to us by our five consultants that changed some of the land use planning and land use designations in some areas, but those were minor. We had land use district refinements in that previously in the 2007 plan, we had a long list of types of development. Just as an example, we had office as well as a office showroom designation. To make it easier for everyone, instead of having two designations, we consolidated some of those land use types to make it a little easier and customer friendly as they went through. Additionally, land or thoroughfares were put in place. Mustang Drive, Airfield Drive were extended. We reflect the new plan for the connector project, as well as show some of the expansion on Highway 183 and some of our future connection roadways that will go east-west through the airport. It also shows some of our cargo master planning and updates that, as well as shows the updates to the regional rail and the accurate reflection of the location from the DART line that has just recently opened December 3rd, coming into Cottonville, into Beltline Station, as well as it shows how Cottonville will eventually come down into the airport. We, since the 2007, have also done a number of drilling opportunities, so we had various pad sites reflected, as well as the update of the pipelines that run through the airport and parking strategies. We had numerous host meetings with our host cities that surround the airport, and in fact the airport falls within the municipal boundaries, to coordinate with those folks. And this is just a real quick timeline of the efforts to get to the 2012. We really started some of the mapping workshops that was internally and externally in the January-February timeframe of 2012, so almost a year ago. We met with all those host cities, their planning departments, their economic development partners, and made presentations to their planning and zoning commissions and the city councils, and got full buy-in to make sure that we were working in concert with our partners in the region. We also have, as you know, none of this is done in a vacuum, so we have a very close relationship with our owner city staff, and I want to thank a number of them for their efforts, especially Hammond Perot, Sarah Hafid, Anna Holmes, and most recently we were graced with the presence of Carl Radiskowski to talk to us about what you're doing in the regional center. So through those discussions, too, we make sure that we were in concert and alignment with what our owner cities are looking for in terms of development through our owner city task force review. And then we're going through and currently in the process of the owner city briefing. Just briefly, a couple of areas of specific development, just to give you an update of some of the projects that have occurred. In 2001, we opened up International Commerce Park. From basically raw land, it is now completely developed, fully leased. We have Dallas Cowboys merchandising headquarters for the entire world. We have AVL, which is the world's leader and the largest airplane parts distributor in the world. Their corporate worldwide headquarters is also located in this park. We have over 6 million square feet of industrial and office, many of which use and utilize air service to move parts around the world. Sikorsky, we were also blessed to have Sikorsky and CTI develop on the airport, and just here a little over, probably close to 2 years ago, they announced their new oil tower. Across the world, helicopter blades are balanced using oil towers. The technology behind that is generally half of the world's blades are manufactured so that they're balanced going counterclockwise. The other half is clockwise. This particular technology can balance bidirectional blades. So any blade, no matter where it is developed, can be balanced here, and it's one of the few in the entire world that allows that or has that capability. Southfield Plaza is our most recently approved by the board, and it's located right in front of the rental car facility on about 32 acres. It is a mixed-use development. You can see here the basic site plan for the development. It will include a number of different things on the property, including multiple retail and restaurants that will give our customers, our passengers, those commuters that run through the airport on a daily basis, and the over 50,000 employees on the airport opportunities to eat where you don't have to go through the security side inside the terminal. It's also going to be a location for our consolidated headquarters and provide more efficiency to the airport in terms of operations. We plan to build and own another hotel. We have had great success with the Grand Hyatt. And just as note, the city of Euless, a little over a year ago, entered into a hotel occupancy tax sharing agreement in which any taxes that are generated through hotel occupancy tax will also be shared with the owner cities of Dallas and Fort Worth. So in addition to sharing of all the sales taxes at this location and anywhere in Euless, they have also agreed to share those hotel occupancy taxes, which is going to be a great economic benefit to the city of Dallas. And then we have a couple of different sites. We're also moving the United States Postal Service from the west side of the airport to a location. This is one of their most profitable locations in their entire system. They want to remain on the airport, and it's very important that we keep them on the airport to maintain the USW airport address. They're going to move on to this site, and we're waiting for some final approval from Washington. And then we have some future development sites that have been identified for future office. This is a couple of the renderings from the Hyatt Place Hotel that will be developed and our consolidated headquarters. One other development, Founders Plaza, which is on the north end of the airport. It's on the southern terminus of Texan Trail, just south of Highway 114. We have plans there for another mixed-use development, have already been in negotiations, but that is another opportunity, and we have on the corner a very unique airport-centric type development, which is not just a fueling facility, but also has some restaurants and other opportunities for a bank that we're in negotiations with them currently. Another very exciting project is in Cajal. We have to thank Mayor Hunt and her leadership. Just recently, in just the past few months, Cajal, which we have been working with for several years, signed an interlocal tax sharing arrangement with Dallas and Fort Worth, and now any development that occurs in the city of Cajal will also provide economic impact and tax sharing up in Cajal. And we have already, we knew that this was very good land. We have worked through the task force as well as the city of Cajal and have already received offers from multiple developers to develop almost the entire 200-acre site by the end of this next year. Would probably be under leases on the vast majority of this property. That kind of concludes the update on the land use plan and some of the significant development that is going on. We greatly appreciate the support that we receive from our owner cities, and I'm very open to any questions that you might have on what we're doing on land development and the land plan.
Thank you, Mayor. Ms. Atkins.
A couple questions, on your commercial development. The LLO agreement with Costello and the city that during the development, talk about the sales tax. Do some of that revenue come to the Dollar General? Share all that revenue for the deal then?
No, currently the only revenue stream that can go off of airport are taxes. And so when commercial development occurs on the airport and taxes are generated, the airport does not collect any of those taxes. Those taxes are shared between the host city and Dallas and Fort Worth. So it is a revenue stream directly to Dallas.
So in the next year, anything that we do at DFW and that's off-court, the revenue is going into the coffin of DFW. Do the city of Dallas benefit any type of revenue from DFW Airport?
From the taxes?
Yeah.
Yes. All taxes that are created, they do not actually come to DFW Airport. The lease dollars that come in off the ground leases of the land or the facility leases go directly to DFW Airport.
We're going to do it right now. Could you give me a schedule that said in 2005, 2006, 2007, 2008, as we do these commercial development, how much revenue is coming to the city dollar in the future?
We'd be happy to do that. Currently, total taxes generated off the airport to all taxing entities, that includes school districts, counties, owner cities, and host cities, is about $63 to $65 million. We have done a Joan Klein LaSalle study that shows what the impact in terms of tax generation will be out to the year 2038. I'd be happy if the direction, and certainly checking with the executive staff and Mr. Fagan, we'd be happy to make any kind of presentation requested.
I think we need that. I think so we can look at our budget, and we come in the budget year, first quarter of the year, which is January and February, and our city manager said, what is our budget? And I would just more look at the revenue when we look at our budget going forward 2013, Jerry, in August, that we don't see that extra revenue that we don't see until the last minute and such forecasting out.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. A follow-up question to Mr. Adkins' question is, how is property tax handled? Is it the same as sales tax, or does that go directly?
Property tax also comes to the taxing entities that would charge those property taxes. It goes to those taxing entities, and if there is a tax sharing arrangement in place, it is split between the owner cities. The only location that would currently do not have a tax sharing arrangement is in the city of Grapevine, north of Highway 114.
Okay. And then another question. The land for these developments is leased to the developer?
That is correct.
And continues to be owned by the airport?
Yes, ma'am. We do not sell property. Our maximum term lease right now is about 4 years.
Okay. Thank you.
Uh-huh. Thank you very much, Mr. Cabello.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Mr. Cabello, the South Coast Driver, place for us?
Yes, sir.
Did you say I can get to that driver from any gate at the airport without leaving security?
No, sir. That is so you don't have to go through security. You can get to that so you do not have to go into a terminal, as well as, let me just see if I can put that up there. You can actually see, it's at the south end. If you're familiar with where the rental car facility is, it's at a diamond interchange where they have the service road exit. The toll booths going into the airport are immediately north of that on International Parkway. This will allow a commuter on the service road or anyone on International Parkway to get off onto this site, also stay at the hotel, etc., but you do not have to go through the secured side. You're not in the secured side.
But it is on the property that the terminals are on, correct?
Well, it is on the airport property. It is outside of the terminal area. So it's, outside where you go in through security.
So I can't get to it from, if I've got a 2 hour layover, I couldn't go to this facility from the airport. Is there transportation?
Yes, there will be a tow bus back and forth. And as a matter of fact, there's a rental car bus that takes everybody that is in the terminals over to the rental car facility. And we're going to be working on the coordination of transportation between the terminals and this site prior to the construction.
Is that, how far off is that? Is that
construction?
Yeah.
We'll be breaking ground, we hope, by May.
Oh, fantastic. Okay, thank you, Madam.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. Next, go. And let's go. Thank you, Madam.
Can I hear from my friend to the mayor of Southwest?
Yes, ma'am, but I've got to keep that real quiet in any meeting session. Thank you. I'm wearing my airport hat today.
I just wanted to mention that to my colleagues and the million closest friends of mine that are watching.
Oh, thank you.
Mr. Mayor. Okay, thank you very much for your presentation. Southgate Plaza is a wonderful, wonderful idea. There was a time that I worked on the airport, and it would be wonderful to have a place to go and be able to get lunch without having to go through the secured area. So this plaza is extremely exciting to me. The hotel that is in Hewitt, is that hotel completely within Hewitt?
It is, yes, ma'am.
So all of our hotels have?
Actually, this entire development is completely within Hewitt. So the line between Hewitt and the city of Irving is immediately on the east side. If you drew a line north-south on the east side of the rental car facility, Irving is to the east and Hewitt is to the west. So this, go ahead.
Does the tax-sharing agreement apply to all the taxes that will come off of this property or just the hotel?
All the taxes that would come off. Okay. And it's a kind of a technical language, but any kind of tax that would go into a general fund, and my understanding from the attorneys and so forth is that while hotel tax has specific uses when derived by that city that generates that hotel tax, when it is shared, I believe those hotel taxes will go to your general fund rather than your hotel occupancy tax fund.
Mr. Mayor, you answered one of the other questions that I had about if there were any of the cities
with which we did not have a tax sharing agreement. Do you know why, with the city of Lake Vine north of 142, we do not have a tax sharing agreement?
Yes, ma'am, but it's a very lengthy explanation, and
I'm happy to do it offline.
I would love to talk to you, and I can share with you where we are with that. We have been in negotiations with them for some time.
Excellent, because I hope we're moving towards that.
Absolutely.
I'll be happy to talk with you offline, Mr. Mayor. Finally, Mr. Mayor, you mentioned two people from the executive staff were here.
Yes.
I know those people by faces. I'm not sure everybody knows the faces.
Okay.
Can you ask those two people to stand and identify themselves by face so that the council and the public can identify them?
Absolutely. Cindy Cannon and Mr. Ritter.
Let's see who over the corner is.
Cindy Cannon is up front. Mr. Ritter is behind Cindy Cannon.
Because they look like twins. I like to see you over the corner.
Sometimes I have a hard time distinguishing them myself.
Thank you to the executive staff for being here and for your work, Mr. Buchanan, Mr. Ritter, and all the rest of the executive staff. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you,
Madam Mayor. Thank you very much, Mr. Good point. Mr. Davis.
Thank you so much, Madam Mayor. Can we go to the founder's closet, please? It's on page 16. I like this. Can you just talk a little about this founder's clause, please?
Absolutely. This is a great story in that previously, several years ago, we had a what was called the founder's plaza, which is an observation where you can watch airplanes land and take off, and it was located towards the southeast side of the airport. When we built and connected Walnut Hill through, it displaced that observation area, and we moved it to a very highly visible location up in this north area. I don't have a mouse here, but if you're looking down towards the bottom right corner of that, just to the east of that, at the end of the runway, Founders Plaza has already been built, the observation, new observation area, and it's a beautiful spot. We have tens of thousands of kids that come out with their classrooms every year to watch planes take off, land. It's also a historical recognition of how the airport was founded. It provides a great destination and attraction that is complementary to mixed-use development. So, based on that use, we designed a development that would include future hospitality, the convenience retail restaurants, and we have been in negotiations. The city of Grapevine, Texan Trail is what runs north and south immediately, right in the middle of the property. Grapevine has designated Texan Trail as their second tourism corridor besides their main street. It terminates at the end, the north end of Texan Trail into Gaylord Resort, and we are the southern terminus of Texan Trail, and it provides great bookends for and a huge amount of traffic in that 114 borders the north side of it and has a gigantic amount of traffic on that, and is completed, in fact, in June of this year. So the development signing coordinated in conjunction with the development of the observation area, the highway infrastructure that's going to be complete, I think really has brought together a great development opportunity.
Let me ask you this. Now, see here on the same page, it says it's gonna, the site's going to have a station, a convenience store, a food court, car wash, repair shop, light auto, and banking service. Will these services be bidded out, or you guys have already decided who's going to be?
On this particular one, we will have RFPs bid out in many of these circumstances, especially, for instance, the retail and restaurants at Southgate. This particular first development with the gas station is with a group called Airport Plazas, and they specialize in airport convenience located in a number of airports across the country. On that one, we're doing a direct negotiation, and many of the others we will be doing RFPs.
And of course, I hope that we also look at minority firms, especially African American and Latino firms, as we do this
process.
Absolutely.
To give them an opportunity and a chance to be a part of this. I really do like this. I think it's quite amazing because it gives the airport a little more with the food court, the car wash, the banking service. Have y'all looked at what bank?
No, not yet.
Not yet.
Not yet.
Okay.
And I also add that in addition to your comments about working with the MWBE opportunities for the retail, restaurants, and all the developments, we also look at that in terms of all the infrastructure and constructing this site.
Okay.
So we will be putting that out to a lot of folks in, coming up.
Okay, thank you so much. I saw that and I thought that was pretty neat. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Cook. Thank you. Good presentation. Very nicely done. I think I've been lost at Founders Plaza trying to get to the airport in the middle of the night. I think I've been lost in almost every part of your airport because of the connector. I still get that comment all the time. Honestly, I didn't think that they cut off my entrance only one day and I ended up in Founders Plaza somehow or another. I was confident to see
you in the
honestly, I'm going to see GPS on my ride, exactly. But anyways, that's going to be complete sometime, you know, hopefully in the near future. And it's going to be super out there and going to have all sorts of access, and it's going to be terrific. Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Atkins and I were talking about we're coming back and we were discussing whether we want to have a dual meeting. But I would suggest to the manager that when you do come back, have you come back and brief the full council. It doesn't have to be a very long briefing, but we just want to see the trail of the dollars, the tax dollars going into the city coffers, and the timeline on that. So if you could do it, Madam Manager, line that up for us, that would be helpful, okay?
We will take our direction
from
the city manager.
Thank you. So let's see, Mr. Carroll.
Yes, thank you, Madam Mayor. Let me just ask, since we were talking here about the lane, are we doing anything or having any consideration on inter-airport deal board?
I'm sorry, the inter-airport what?
Deal board.
Deal board, yes. There has been some discussion about that, but I might let Tim Buchanan might be wanting to address that. I don't know exactly what the status is.
Buchanan, did you address that? And then while he's coming, Mayor, let me just ask you, and I hate to keep saying this, just respectfully have to respect you in that capacity. How many cars, do we know how many cars travel straight through the airport going from 183 over to the other side, back and forth, that are not coming into the airport or from?
We actually have multiple traffic studies, and I'd be happy to provide you with some of those numbers, but they are different depending on if they're coming in from the north, Service Road,
right,
International Parkway, south, Service Road, International Parkway, and if I come back for another report, I'd be happy to bring you all those numbers.
And that's important because, you know, when we look at commercial and we talk about the opportunity of creating more revenue, I was looking, Mr. Cannon, at maybe a lower level deal board and not just us, but if we have hundreds or thousands of cars every day that are accessing through the airport just to pay the toll, but we have an opportunity to have a especially new electronic type deal board that we could put along those lines that would serve and bring additional revenue into us. And as you look at our commercial land use, I know a lot of folks want to talk about administration vehicles, but then that's just one of those things I tried to just kind of put them a little lower. Yes, but let's try to get to the revenue side of it to see that if people are going through accessing our roads and they're paying our tolls, well, what else can we do? Some toll fees, they submit additional dollars, they're not going to come, they're not going to go to the airport to buy any of the concessions, but they're going straight through. So there has to be somewhat that we can capitalize on that. And I'm talking deputies, I'm not talking a lot of them, I'm not talking, but I'm talking some that would become a revenue generator in which will give us additional money.
And King will speak to that, Mr. Buchanan.
Yes, of course. Thank you, Mr. Caraway. Matter of fact, this afternoon, I have a study that I will be evaluating. Our board has sanctioned a study to determine what the potential revenue stream would be from different advertising vehicles on airport. As you know, we focus predominantly our advertising in terminal. We have a partnership with Clear Channel advertising. Mm-hmm. We don't have a partnership currently for digital advertising or outdoor advertising. So the result of the study that we've done is to look at all 18,000 acres and major thoroughfares around the airport and see if there are potential advertising opportunities, whether they are billboard, electronic advertising, monumental type of advertising. As you know, we've gone to many airports around the world, and most of those airports have tremendous advertising opportunities that are not intrusive, that they complement the airport, they're very iconic in nature, and we've looked at that. So this afternoon we'll have the results of that study, but we are looking at those potential revenue streams, as well as iconic. And as you know, we're investing over $2.5 billion to renovate the airport. We'll have rail coming in from Dodge in the team in the near future. And so, and we have new plaza entryways in and out of the airport. So the airport is undergoing an entire facelift at this time, and it's a great opportunity to look at the potential for monumental advertising and billboard advertising done very tastefully as a potential revenue stream. So we are exploring that.
And also, I saw Janet Keene's ears light up when we just lit up back there when we talked about advertising. Landscaping advertising. In Las Colinas, for example, there's I believe that's a Texaco station where they, you know, carved out and designed Texaco or something with a clock around it. Things of that nature. And the great thing I want you to know that I'm just speaking of some type of revenue generation that will lend itself to advertising, not limited to just billboards, and I think you've answered that. And
absolutely, monumental advertising also includes landscaping advertising of that nature. And that's some really innovative opportunities that exist out there that not only will be unique and beautify the airport, plus provide a revenue stream, an additional revenue stream.
Well, I'm very interested in you keeping me abreast, and you are keeping me abreast of that, and we can see how that process is going to go. I don't know if it's something that we should sanction with the indoor and then the outdoor, if that should be something separate in itself. I would prefer for it to be separate in itself, to keep the indoor, keep the outdoor, and if the indoor people, you know, have the opportunity to do both, then that's fine. But you answered it, and I see we're going in the right direction, in the direction that I favor. So, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms.
All right, Ms. Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Mayor, and thank you, Mayor, for a good presentation. I have two questions. Going back to the hotel tax for the South Street Plaza, you mentioned that it wouldn't be the hotel occupancy tax that it goes to, it would be the general fund, is that correct?
Well, I don't want to pretend to even be an attorney, but my understanding and what I have heard from the various attorneys is that once that hotel tax is actually paid to the city of Euless, Euless then gives back a portion, two-thirds of that hotel tax is going to come back to Dallas and Fort Worth.
Mm-hmm.
And when it makes that route, when they pay it out, it is no longer classified as the hotel occupancy tax, so you do not have to put it in that area and it can go to your general fund. I would ask that you check and confirm that with your city attorney so that I'm not told why it is for that.
No, I understand that. I just wanted to know if there was a possibility that rather than going to the general fund, it would go to the Dallas hotel tax or whatever our portion of that is. We passed the hotel tourism PID last year, and that money or that PID funds
a lot of things here in Dallas, and so I would like to know, Tom, if you're here, Tom Perkins, if you're here, we'll get a clarification from him on what happens to that hotel tax when it comes back. Tom, we were talking about the hotel tax that originally it goes to ULIS, they take their portion of it, and then they send back to a fund what's left on the hotel occupancy tax, and I'm looking at the Southgate Plaza.
Right.
And so what was mentioned was that hotel occupancy tax, when it comes back to Dallas, does not have to stay a hotel occupancy tax. It can go into the general fund. My concern, obviously, is that we passed the tourism code last year, and trying to make sure that we capture as much for that PID so that money goes right back into the city. So my question is, what's the legal part of that in terms of keeping it a hotel occupancy tax when it comes back to Dallas?
For the PID or for the hotel tax?
However you do that. I mean, I was just mentioning the PID, but my question is, does it, why are we not keeping it a hotel tax when it comes to bathroom meals?
Ms. Tonto, would you allow me to do the research and get back to you? I'll get you an answer. I just want to make sure that I understand the question, and I'll get your response.
Yeah, very good. Thank you,
Ms. Tonto.
And then the next thing is, well, some of us might want hotel tax.
Then let me go ahead and apologize to all those folks.
Maybe wake them up. I'm sorry. The only other thing I have, Mayor, is that I'll be looking at the NWBE awards, definitely for Hispanic participation. We have an opportunity today, I think, to name another board member to the DSW board. So I'll be working with that person to monitor and just make sure that we are getting our fair share. Thank you.
I was going to ask myself. Mayor, on slide number 12, the post office, and I know that you're still getting, planning on getting information from Washington. Where is the post office now?
If you're looking at where the big red arrow is pointing,
mm-hmm.
There's and you go just a little further on the west side and almost fronting International Parkway, immediately north of that is probably the first development of buildings that's kind of shaded lightly on the aerial. It is located in a very large building of about 194,000 square feet.
Okay.
A lot of our aeronautical service ceased a number of years ago, and a lot of that building was vacant. We had better utilization of that building. They currently only occupy about 19,000 square feet of an almost 200,000 square foot building. We had better uses instead of just tearing it down for internal purposes, consolidating some of our equipment and people into that building and ask for the post office to relocate. They don't even need the 19,000 square feet that they had. They're going to be reducing down to about a 6,000 square foot footprint. They have been very successful, even as difficult as it is to access that location, and they're seeing the opportunity by moving to this location and being already a destination to only increase their revenues to the Postal Service, and it will be a true destination and consumer or customer-friendly option located inside this development.
So, is that a 24-hour facility?
It is not 24 hours, at least not in the entire facility. A portion of it may be 24 hours, but they will have regular hours as most post offices have in a city.
Okay, thank you. Following up on the hotel tax there, so once it comes, our portion comes to Dallas and the other portion goes to Ulysses and Fort Worth, then it is up to
the counselor or city manager to then.
As my understanding, it goes into your general fund, and the way it's paid generally is those taxes are still paid to the host city unless they're due. They then make payments to Dallas and Fort Worth for the portion that they are obligated to under the interlocal tax sharing arrangement. Once it comes to the city, it is my understanding that most of that goes into your general fund, and you decide this, what you want to do that under your own budgeting procedures.
Are those paid on a quarterly basis, monthly basis?
I have to confirm, but I think it's
an annual, and you're exactly right. It's part of our general fund revenues, as well as any other tax revenues comes into the fund.
Thank you very much, sir.
Absolutely.
I will thank you for sharing. We're done with this. I do want to say one thing to the council that last week we had the resignation of Mr. Pagan as the CEO of the airport. He will be staying through September, I think, to September. And the chairman, Robert Hsu, has put together a working group to figure out a process, and that is going to come back to the board to endorse and be involved with. Our new members will be involved in that as well. I say that in the sense that I think there's a process. It's a very important job to hire. There's two things. One is we've got a great staff. One thing Jeff, I think, has done a good job is to hire good people. So we shouldn't be missing a beat in anything, I don't think, from an operations standpoint. And he's given us long tenure. And the second thing is that if any of you have points of view on the type of person we should be hiring in that role, please, I'm all ears, and let me know as we start to do that. Let our representatives know on the board. This is a very important job for the city of Dallas, so I want you guys included in this process. Thank you very much, Mayor.
Thank you.
We'll move on to the next issue, the proposal of the bond program implementation schedule, and I think that Jordan is going to leave that.
I have one thing.
Yes, sir. Well, there's a lot of people liking that. Okay. There's a lot of people like that. That's fine. Okay. So is Ms. Rito here? You know Rita? Okay. You'll read it in the record, and I'll send it over to you in the school.
Version C, the Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport Board of Directors Nomination and Appointment Process. First time we spoke of Councilmember Davis is recusing herself from the briefing and the voting if one takes place today. Good morning, I will brief you on the nomination and appointment process. The purpose of this briefing is to present an overview of one, the current nomination process for selecting appointees to the DFW Airport Board, and two, the appointment process results. A little background information. The City of Dallas appoints 6 members to the board. Places 1, 5, and 11 terms expire on January 31st of odd number years. Places 4, 6, and 9 terms expire on January 31st of even number years. To the Council Resolution Number 76-1888 states that the Mayor of the City of Dallas is automatically appointed to fill place 10. Next is the current selection process. In November, the Mayor and City Council members each are asked to submit up to 3 nominations to the city secretary's office. You are asked to submit a nominating memo to include a resume and or bio. The city secretary then begins background checks on all candidates. During this current selection process, only 5 nominees were received by the November 16, 2012 deadline, with 1 nominee being withdrawn. In December, the Transportation and Environment Committee, TEC, reviewed and selected a maximum of 6 candidates to interview. Of the 4 interviews conducted, the TEC recommends 3 nominees for appointment. All appointments are for a 2-year term. In January, the City Council is briefed on the selection process and appointment opportunities. Today, the City Council can vote on the TEC recommended nominees or reschedule the vote for the January 23, 2013 Council meeting. The City Council also has an option of substituting a nominee as long as the substitute nominee has been interviewed by the TEC. The City Secretary's Office then assigns place numbers after a formal appointment by the City Council. In February, the new terms begin. Please note, members will hold over if no appointment is made in January. Slide 5 recaps the selection process timeline. November 16, 2011, Resolution 11-3106 approved the new appointment process. October 19, 2012, the City Secretary's Office requested nominations from the City Council. October 26, 2012, November 2nd, and November 9, 2012, updates and status reports were sent to the City Council. November 16, 2012 was the deadline for nominations to be submitted to the City Secretary's Office. December 10th, the TEC interviewed 4 nominees and selected 3 to recommend to the City Council for appointment. Today, you are being asked to, you are being briefed with an option to conduct appointment. If no action is made today, then the January 21st, 2013 Council meeting is an optional date for appointment. Let me restate the TEC recommendation nominees. Regina Montoya, Curtis Ransom, and Forrest Smith. This concludes the briefing.
Thank you. Ms. Coop,
Thank you. Can I see the paper that I requested the other day? It says the 3. The process is actually to get a little bit confusing when we don't have those. Colleagues, the Transportation Committee reviewed this. We interviewed, and I see several of them in the audience today, we interviewed the nominees. There were 3 places open and are currently open. Mr. Smith, Mr. Morrow has resigned, and there was one vacancy, which was Brenda Reyes. We received 5 nominations as the Assistant City Secretary stated, and 3 were selected. And if I and the committee voted on them, and I still have the list of the names.
Yes, forgive me, but I'm sorry.
Thank you. Curtis Ransom, Forrest Smith, and Regina Montoya were the 3 that were selected. The committee has asked me to bring those forward at this time for approval. And that was a slight, and typically it happens in this case, unless there's an objection, there's, I make a motion to do that. And it's seconded by somebody on the committee. I open to that for discussion. There is an opportunity if we want to postpone it to another week, but the committee's asked to go forward with it. So I make that motion.
We'll have discussion. First of all, Ms. Carewood. If there's no other comments, then we'll just move forward. Ms. Cadena, seconded. We just motioned it. Okay. So other discussion?
Mr. Alonzo. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you, first of all, Ms. Coop, for your leadership. I think it was wonderful. You did a great job, and you continue to do a great job as a chairwoman. I just wanted to make sure that we are communicating with everyone here. Please introduce the individuals who are here. Also, I want to, I believe that you're asking for the list because you want it to present all the nominees. And I think that now I'll take that opportunity to say thank you to all the nominees, to all those that came forward and accepted to be appointed. I think it's important. I think it's a volunteer position, but the fact that those said yes is very important, that we recognize them, that we thank them. Also, that we, whoever we appoint at this time as a representative, I was just going to ask Mr. Mayor, the purpose of us doing it today as opposed to next week, which is what we are anticipated to do in the first place. The purpose of moving up the agenda, I just wanted to ask that question. And also, making sure that we recognize those individuals and we ask those that are going to be appointed that they continue to visit with us and let us know what's going on. Because, as I mentioned earlier, the mayor indicated earlier that there is going to be a new position that we're going to be, that they're going to be voting on in the future. And we want to make sure that it's an inclusiveness process and that everyone's involved and that they share that information so that if there's any questions or if there's any concerns that we have, that we address them. But I want to right now say thank you to those that participated. Thank you to those that have been in the position already and continue. I think Mr. Smith, you've done a wonderful job. I believe that, there's no one but praise that what you've done and all the other individuals that are there now and those that are going to be coming, that will continue with that dialogue and that communication. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman.
Okay. Did you have a question in there that we need to answer? And one of them is why we picked this date?
Reason for voting today as opposed to next week. First question. Second question is, what is the purpose of going to the CB4B in the agenda right now?
Well, that is my priority, just kind of move what we thought was going to be a short discussion and get done, but that may be a mistake. But let's talk about the date.
Right. The date was discussed at the Transportation Committee meeting, that we have an opportunity to move this forward on this date, or that we would, if we had extension, that we could obviously put it off for a week. We always try to do it right after the nominees have been actually interviewed as soon as possible. So there's a just an opportunity to meet them if they come. We had lots of people come to the meeting that weren't on the committee, have an opportunity to meet them, hear what they had to say, and express on their mind. So it's been done this way before. It's not a new process that we're using. I would like to take this opportunity to introduce the folks that we interviewed. So, okay, yeah, do that. Okay. I'll start with Forrest Smith, who's currently on the board. Mr. Smith, thank you, and thank you for your service. Curtis Ransom, thank you, good morning. Regina Montoya, good morning. That's the place that we had chosen from the Transportation Committee. Additionally, we interviewed Amanda Cross, if she's here today. She's not here, okay. And she had a good interview as well.
Okay.
Did I answer your question?
The second question was, why did we move from
CBC?
And the answer is, you indicated that it was personal privilege, and I understand that, but you had already started with me. I'm just asking the question, just pointing it out.
Well, I'm sorry. You need more time? He just suggested it, and everybody said it's a good idea, and I just decided to do it.
Asking a question.
Yeah, and let me just say that he just finished the airport presentation on the airport board and the executives are here, and it's not going to be a long process. For it seems instead of holding them up and making them come back, we would entertain trying to move it now, and that's the mayor's cause, and that's what it is.
Thank you, Mr. Atkins.
First, I want to thank Linda Coop, Chair on the Transparency Committee, and all the people who's on the committee, you know, for outstanding job they've done. I believe that the process was a very, very fast process, and all the candidates who were nominated for the DFW board were qualified to do it. I know Amanda Clark was a good person, a nominee. I think she will be back for another board. She had a great interview. I believe that the board that is here today has got a very, very hard, difficult mission. The manager said earlier that Jeff will put his resignation in as of September. I hope that these nominees that are here will wear up their sleeves and be patient, be open and honest, and make sure they come to the DFW board meeting and really dig in their hard work. Because DFW is accurate with the jewel to the whole region here. And we've got to have people that are very, very passionate about the roots of DFW and the future of DFW and the leadership. We've got to have strong leadership with DFW board, and we're going to be playing international. So those nominees are Kelly Andrews, Carlos, and Regina. I hope you hear me clearly. That we're going to be watching you. We're going to make sure that you are doing the correct thing and be fair and open and honest in the selection of the new director of the DFW board. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Brown.
I will just also want to thank the school secretary's department. They did a really good job. They were so hard on this, the assistant city secretary, and also Jesse. Y'all done an excellent job on that. Next up, this is our appointee. So I just let y'all know, I don't want anybody to, you know, and that would be the last one. 8 years. But I think the process went really well. I think we've got it pretty much fine tuned now.
Thank you,
Mr. Medrano. Thank you, Mayor. What I would suggest is that once the vote is taken today, that the new board members exchange contact information with council members. I think it's really important that we stay in communication. There are some very crucial decisions to be made at DFW, and I think for all of us to be real comfortable and having each other's contact information, because there are a few times that we need some information, maybe just your input, what you're thinking and what we're thinking, and to bring those thoughts to the board as well. I know that Ms. Coop has, I think it's an annual meeting the transportation of the DFW board members come and just talk to the council members as well, or this is our committee. It's our committee, our transportation environment committee, to just give us evidence as well and what's happening and how we can help you as well. So I think that is key on there, that we make sure that we stay in communication with our board members. Thank you.
Thank you. And you're discussing Mr. Hassel.
Mayor, and I'm glad that Mayor Pro-Tem Medrano raised this issue. I was able to get a lot of communication from one of our prior board members simply because the lines of communication were open. I know many times there's a lot of frustrating things that happen. Just from the communication that I got from her. So I hope that we can continue that. It's very important that we know and we understand what is happening there. We're a huge part of that airport, and all of the things that happen there affect us. So I want to be sure that not just you, Regina, but Kenton Flores and Curtis. I would love to continue that type of open communication so that we can understand your frustrations as well. This is not all wonderful, pie in the sky stuff. There's a lot of frustrating things at home. So I want to be sure that we all three of us have good lines of communication and that we can work to help. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other discussion? So we have a motion and a second for this slate of nominees. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion is carried.
Congratulations, Forrest, for your hard work over. I got you one more time around the lap, right?
Yeah.
Thanks for everything you've done. I echo, you've been a real pro. And Regina and Curtis, it's great to have you on the team. I also want to echo, Ms. Madrona, you have not sat down with any one of these city council members. If you make an appointment with each one of them, sit down, tell them what you think, let them talk to you, and let's make sure that we've got that communication open. Please, Ms. Madrona, go ahead.
I just want to note a few minutes. I think if the council members do not have their business cards, can we have their assistants come and bring some and just give them to today if you wish to. I'd ask my assistant to bring those cards to me.
Good. All right, with that, we will move to item B. Ms. Gordon.
As that comes up, this is our outline for the order of the new bond program. It's been really tough for a couple of reasons, and as you look at these, I want you to appreciate the difficulties and the constraints that work here. Number one, in our first year, I'll wait a minute.
Yeah. Guys, hold on. If you don't have some cards are coming. Curtis and Regina, in particular. Okay, we've been nice enough to each other. Now let's move on. Go. Yeah, that's right. That's right. When I became mayor, I did. Okay, order in the court, so to speak. Let's go. All right, please, guys, let's take any dialogue out of the room. All right, we got to go.
Okay. This briefing today is implementation schedule for the 2012 bond program. And it's very challenging because, one, it's a small bond program. Two, we're completing the 06, the tail end of the 06 bond program. And the first year, the debt capacity we have is pretty snug. It's kind of like your credit card. You've only got about $50 more or less on your credit on that particular card, so you just can't charge for a while. As soon as we go through, that loosens up a little bit. Additionally, I would say to you, we've been pushing further than our projections of growth for the property base. I think this is appropriate given what's going on at the federal level and some of the lack of resolution there may have some impact on our economy, even though it's doing very well. And additionally, you have indicated on several occasions that you would like to see a shift from in the tax rate from the debt service to more of the operations, so we're kind of working on that too. Jill will go through this with you and can meet with you individually. I would just ask you to keep in mind that these constraints are pretty tight as we arrange this bond program going forward. So, Jill?
Right, thank you. Beginning on the next slide.
the big factors that affect how we allocate the projects over the course of the bond program is our ability to pay, so what's our debt capacity. We also have the commercial paper program. We've got to watch how much money we have out in commercial paper, and we have to match the commercial paper availability to our projects. And then we need to manage the projects effectively and efficiently. We only have so many staff, so many inspectors to get projects out the door. Looking at the financial criteria, some of the things that we really are looking at there are, again, it's our capacity to pay. So what's our ad valorem tax base doing? Is it growing? Is it staying the same? We have to project that. And then you always have a concern about the ratio of how much money, tax money is going towards debt service versus the operating, and you always wanted to keep that the same or even put more towards operating, less to debt. So that's another factor that comes into play. The commercial paper is all about just in time, and we have a limit as to how much we can have out there, and so we have to be respectful of that limit. And we are using the commercial paper in the previous bond programs, so what we're doing in those old bond programs affects the availability that we can do this project. And then, of course, each year we'll be issuing general obligation bonds to take out the commercial paper to refresh it for the next year and do the next round of projects. On the public work side, on the staffing side of how to get the projects out the door, we look at a variety of factors, and one of them is, what is the project itself? What is the nature? What is it trying to do? And projects to protect lives and property, so those big drainage projects, they come high on the list. We also use the technical ratings. So when we do things like resurfacing, we've got hundreds of resurfacing jobs, we're looking at the ones that come higher in the list than some of the ones that are ranked lower. For economic development, we're looking at what's ready to go now. What's the council priority? How do we get, economic development out the door? And when do we need the money to match the development? And so that's a factor. Likewise, we have the intergovernmental projects that we have other partners. They have a schedule. We need to match them, and so we honor those schedules. We also have a commons of scale. So you have projects that might have one little project, and if it just goes by itself, the contract is going to bid higher than if it gets grouped with other projects that are similar in nature. So we look to how can we group things so that we can get the best pricing from contractors. We're also looking at geographic distribution, not only amongst the council districts, but within the council districts. For example, if we have resurfacing and we have projects randomly placed in a district, the contractors have to go in a wide, lot of different areas. If they're grouped in an area where we concentrate a project, it's easier for them to manage the project because they're all right there. And so again, we get cost savings by doing that. So geographic distribution is also important. And then another factor is that some projects don't require designs. For example, resurfacing. That's something that we can turn those projects out without plan. So we can get them going the first year. However, we have only so many inspectors for the resurfacing jobs, and so we have a capacity of doing $15 to $20 million of resurfacing each year that we can do comfortably and ensure quality. And so we try to allocate the resurfacing then across all of the different years of the bond program. The other projects that require design, we're looking at which ones are going to be more complicated design, which ones might need right-of-way, and so we try to look at doing the design as close to the construction as possible so that we don't have changes in the plan, but giving enough time that we can do the design correctly and get the right-of-way. So what you'll see when you look at your district sheets is you'll see a lot of projects with a small amount first, that's for design, bigger amount later, and that's for construction, and we have to have time to actually do the design and get the right-of-way. Now on the next slide, we talk about the big citywide projects and how they fall out in the bond program. The Houston Street Viaduct, that is matched with the streetcar project so that it is coordinated with that work. I'll jump down to the Able Pump Station. That one's ready to go sooner, and so it's scheduled so that once we complete the design, it goes right on out the door.
the Mill Peak Branch, the big drainage project there. The Ocean Bear is getting all of the right of way, and so it's looking like in fiscal year 15 that will be ready to go. And just so that you all know, for the council members whose districts it covers, so we've already got a meeting with Davis, we've got to set up a meeting with Eunice Hunt and with Eunice Medrano. The public meetings to deal with the citizens and the right of way, because we're going to be getting underground easements. Those meetings are going to start towards the end of this month and go into February, so that project is continuing to roll out the door. That leaves the West Dallas Gateway project, and that is coming at the end of the bond program. It's going to take us a lot to coordinate with the railroad on that project. This slide shows the economic development projects. Again, we're coordinated with economic development and when they think the projects are going to be ready to go. The canyon is the first up, so we need to get the design going. And we think that we can phase the construction of it into two pieces, and so that's why you see this. The UNT, again, we're estimating that this is the schedule that we need to match what will happen out there. For economic development itself and the housing, those demand-driven jobs, they're getting the remaining funds, and depending upon what comes up first, whether it's housing or economic development, we'll play those as they go. Otherwise, they'll be given money kind of 50-50 as they go, but that one will vacillate over the time as we take advantage of people coming forward or us coming up with deals for them. All right, the highlights for the drainage portion of the bond program for the very first year, we're going to do very little erosion control early on in the bond program because we're using so much of the drainage money for those big projects. So most of the erosion is coming later. We've got a couple of small erosion projects that are really critical that are early. The Bahamas storm drainage system, the design is in the first year, construction in subsequent years, and construction of the Mockingbird and the McCain Swale projects. Both of those are ready to go, and so we're ready for construction. We don't need the designs that have been done in previous projects or by others, and so we're ready to do construction on those, and so they're in the first year. For the street projects, there are hundreds of street projects. This is just what we are looking at for the first year. We just tried to pull out some of the ones that you all will probably be most interested in. Let me make a few comments about them. Beginning at the bottom, the Trinity Terrace, that is scheduled with around the Corps of Engineers schedule for when the environmental impact study will be done, when we have permission to go out to bid. And so we'll be designing those trails with the Phase 1 lake, and you all will be seeing that contract later this spring. Another thing that we've done in this bond program is we've put sidewalks generally early in the bond program across all the different projects and in all the different districts. And so sidewalks we've moved earlier. Resurfacing is spread out, again, because we don't have certain capacity and we're looking at projects that really need to be done, so a lot of the big thoroughfares that need resurfacing. One thing that we're doing in this bond program, sometimes we've made our approach to street petitions is to put them late in the bond program and then we see petitions fail because so much time has gone by from when we received the petition to when the conception is that people lose enthusiasm. So we put the street petitions kind of in the middle of the bond program for construction, meaning we need to do design early in the bond program. And the same is going for alleys. The complete streets, they are strung out all through the bond program, so we've picked some of the ones that are, we have keen interest in getting out the door early, so we're beginning the design of some of those, which will see complete streets throughout the whole bond program. Now the next slide is just a summary slide showing the amount of money for each project type by year, so you can begin to see what I was talking about. Where you know, sidewalks are early, petition, you can kind of see towards the middle of the bond program, you see, you know, just different aspects of it. Now, this is an unusual briefing in that probably the piece that you all are most interested in is actually in the appendix. So this is one where I really ask you to take a look at the appendix. We have two appendices for you. One is by your council district. And so you can turn to your district. You can see all of your projects allocated by year. And what we invite you to do is take a look at those, see if you are comfortable with what we're doing, have conversations with us. Now, we have pretty limited ability to move projects forward, so everybody can't move into the first year. And remember, the first year is really just a few months, because this kicks off, we'll start awarding design contracts this summer, so the first year is pretty small for everybody. But we have, if you want to move something forward, you're going to have to move something back within the district. So, and the critical year is year three, because that's where the financial limitations are the greatest. And so things in years four and five, it's going to be pretty difficult to move into the first 3 years unless something goes back the other way. So pay attention to all of that. Feel free to ask me or Rick about this or Liz if it's a drainage project, and we'd be happy to talk with you about it. Then the other tendency is by project type. So if, for say, you say, well, I'm not trails. How did trails do? You can turn to the trails. You can see all the trails with the exception of the SOPAC trail because it's an intergovernmental trail. And you can see how we're doing trails versus group petitions or whatever else. So again, affinity is very important. What will happen this spring is we will be going out, so all the engineering firms will get the call for projects. They'll start turning in their proposals to us. We'll match them up with the first year jobs, and we'll start to see contracts being awarded to engineering firms. A few this spring, but mostly this coming summer. The resurfacing for the year will go out later this spring, and so you'll see the projects roll on out. Every year we adjust it, and that is done as a part of the capital budget. So this will be refined as we go. And with that, happy to...
I would just ask one other thing. Remember, you've got some bond program being completed, so if you're looking to understand and know what's going on capital-wise in your district, get GL folks to give you the previous bond program so you've got the whole picture through the district. This is just 2012, and as I said before, we're finishing up 2006, so you may want to see all of this in one place.
Thank you. Mr. Atkins.
GL, the question I'm going to ask is, the first question is that when you said that if we want to move some up forward about this suburban, about council district, how would you justify to do that? Because we got to get certain, we got certain much of paper. I mean, those are the timeline of how our staff's going to address those issues.
Well,
the
easiest thing is, if you want to move something up, look in your district and look for something that you'd like to move back. So, for example, resurfacing, we might have pulled forward a couple of projects that we thought would make a good group and do well with other projects, but they might not be your priorities for whatever other reason there is. And so you could swap out projects within the year. So there's that kind of math game. Beyond doing that simple math and resurfacing, if you want to take a complete search for resurfacing, again, you've got to match up the money. So this is just like your budget adds for the operating budget that you all do every September, where if you add something, you've got to delete something. You've got to match up your years. And it's more complicated because you've got design. You can't, move a design back behind construction. So we've got to watch that as well. So that's why, please talk to us. Rick and I would be happy to come visit with you and get your priorities for your district if there's some tweaking that needs to be done.
I guess one of my thoughts is that when we went out and tried to do this 2010 bond package, especially running crew at University of North Texas.
Mm-hmm.
My concern was number one, that we
fought so hard to move the dark rail up to 2015 instead of 2021. And we fought so hard for the trail, and that's a big number that the resident, especially right now, the trail is going to be the first one out of the chute. And it looks like it will be 2014 before we even start a design, in 2016 before we complete it. So, with that big number in my district, would that cause to me a whole lot of complications to try to move stuff up, like through the alley, flood protection and storm drainage, because all the flood protection storm drainage is still for 2016 and through 2017. So that is my concern. You know, I mean, the trail was the number one problem in that area in my district, but staff moved it, you know, to 2014 for design in 2016 before we completed it. And we got a dark rail line is going to be completed before the trail can be completed.
Right. Well, one of the things that we were trying to do is coordinate that trail construction with the dark construction so that we don't have two contractors on top of each other. So
I think you had two contracts, you didn't send a contractor, so you're doing two major projects, you might get some cost savings in there, so you're doing the infrastructure, you know, our infrastructure, but I think that we need to look at that because we never know.
Yeah, you don't know. In one case, I'm looking at your project, you know, it could rearrange that we could delay some of the alley reconstruction and some of the street petitions and maybe swap some stuff out. So let's just take a look at it and get with you.
Therefore, what is our timeline here? You know, ask for the timeline. What is that deadline that we got to report those things back to staff and say, the windows is closed down?
What's the week between those?
Oh, no, we're going to go.
Next week.
Next week. Okay, so everybody needs to carry down by the 23rd. Thank you very much.
Get with Jill. It'd be better to have a conversation and get a list because we may not be able to work stuff out without talking to you.
Thank you. Jill, I just want to show you, I just thought that was an excellent briefing. The way you fleshed out all of the bullet points pretty much answered all my questions. I did want to say again, I'll say it now, thank you for putting alley reconstruction so early in the bond program. That was terrific, good news, thank you. And the only question I have left is, I noticed that there was no commercial paper for the 2003 bond program. Can you tell me why?
Because that bond program
is all completed.
We still had some projects that are out there, but the bonds for the 2003 bond program were basically sold, and our philosophy is use the earlier bonds first, so some of the projects from the 2006 bond program actually use 2003 bonds, and some of the 2003 bond program projects will use 2006 bonds to pay them off. So, we're trying to use the money as quickly as possible.
Okay,
so we didn't have commercial paper for that bond program. It's an easy answer.
Again, thank you. Good briefing. I appreciate the way this is rolled out. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Grayson. Ms. Sue.
That's right.
Oh, God. And that was a good briefing, Jill. I thought it was too. I was curious when the manager first started out, she said that we were thinking about it. We want to have a conversation about the percentage of our debt service and perhaps moving some of that percentage into operating budget. It would be my suggestion, although I'm not going to be here for the next budget session, but it would be my suggestion that if you start to try to do that, maybe you want to do it by department so that you see what the impact is by department, because whereas you could probably do that with some of the facilities, like in the park department, new facilities that come online, that people are thinking about, you know, totally new facilities versus the operating budget, that I wouldn't want to see us degrade our infrastructure because our bond rating is based on our is actually based on the quality of our infrastructure. So, or a lot of it is. So I wouldn't want us to see a continual degradation of our infrastructure
by moving a lot of that to the operating side. We have a financial standard for that. It may be a good idea just to show us how that matches up with other cities of the age of the age of our city. Okay? That would ask especially all that of
the answer. It would be very difficult to do it by departments and you make those decisions as you do your budget. I'm not talking about a wholesale system because I don't think we can do that, but the indication that I had was do not increase that percentage because you keep building stuff that we can't operate.
That is my point.
So that's what we're working on. I'm just telling you this won't change overnight. I'm just telling you that we are facing in the direction of not raising that debt anymore and eventually lowering the percentage of it of the tax rate that goes to debt. But there won't.
It was a complex set of circumstances that you really have to, you know, measure. And I agree with you about building other facilities, but then again, we've got open infrastructure that needs to be taken care of as well. We've done that before. We have put off open infrastructure needs, and that has turned out not to be in our best, in the city's best interest.
I hear you.
Okay. Okay. And if you'll come and talk to me, there was just one project I had where I thought the erosion control was of such a nature that perhaps the house might fall into the creek. So we may need to move that one up. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cruz.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Well, thank you for your briefing. A couple of things. One, on Mill Creek and the State Thomas Flood Control Project, both of those will be starting the easement process and all of that as quickly as possible.
Correct.
Okay, very good. And I guess design will follow quickly after that.
Design's going right now.
Very good. I want to turn to the Trinity Trail. That was something that you announced last year that we were extremely excited about. You worked incredibly hard in putting that together, knitting all the funding sources together. And it looks like we're getting going to move forward on the design aspect of this in the coming year in our effort to, as quickly as possible, get some recreational opportunities down in the Trinity.
Mm-hmm.
That is fantastic. I think that's exactly what the public wants to see, and I think it'll be garner a lot of enthusiasm for the Trinity project as well. I noticed that the actual construction is out a couple of years. Can you talk to us a little bit about the reasoning behind that?
Well, the Corps of Engineers won't finish the environmental impact statement till July 14th. And just knowing that date could move a little, and even if they would get that date, we're in summer recess, and you've got August and September, and then you've got October of that next fiscal year. So balancing the bond program out, we just figured just put it in 15 and it'll come early that year. But the lake excavation will come first. That will be kind of the first activity. And then at this point, we're thinking that we'll have just one contract with both the lake work and the trails in it and put it together, although we could break it out. We won't know the answer to that question until we get more into it. But the idea is that these trails are a part of the phase one lake, and that whole project will roll out about the fall of 14, which was fiscal year 15.
Got it. So one of the things that we're counting on in that timeline is when the Corps will come to us with their record of decision.
Right. And that's the July of 14 date.
And we met with the general just a couple of days ago when we spoke with the Trinity Committee. And we want to encourage the Corps and encourage the general to continue to work towards that timeline, if not sooner.
Right. And to the Corps' credit, for the last, I'd say, 9 months to a year, they've been hitting all their deadlines.
Excellent.
So this general is getting them going in the right direction. And the Corps is looking at ways of trying to expedite the schedule, but it's also tied to the parkway, and the parkway has less flexibility at this point. And there's one date that the parkway has to hit so that the Corps can finish on time, so they are tied together. and that date is the kind of the controlling date.
Is there a way that we can extricate the trails from that in any way, that they can just look at the trails?
No, because the trails are a part of the recreational features, and the recreational features are a part of the core project. So if we made them separate, then we'd have to do separate environmental work. That would be an added expense to us. But if we just wait, you know, for the Corps to finish, then we don't have to pay for anything because they're doing it.
We'll have to wait for the whole park road to get approved.
All we have to wait for is for our record of decision.
Okay.
While you're doing this, let me just ask one question on this line, if you don't mind. Explain again why dredging the lake comes before the trail.
Just because the dredging the lake will be so disruptive with the big equipment that unless we put the trail right under the Encore power line, and I don't really want to do that. I'd rather have a more interesting trail. So I'd rather put the big equipment that could bust up a new trail out of the way. And remember, we reserved the corridor underneath the Horseshoe project, so the Pegasus contractor, so it's going to be like a downtown sidewalk. You know, they've got a big construction project on a building, and you have to cover the sidewalk to protect it. We're going to have that for this trail. We've preserved the corridor for city vehicles, maintenance vehicles, and new trails to go underneath the textile construction, because they won't finish until 17.
Good. I'm sorry for jumping in.
No, not at all. Thanks for clarifying that. What else we can do to convey to the Corps that we appreciate their working with us the last several months and being on time? Please tell the General how much the Council and we appreciate that, and to the extent that they can keep us on track for next year, we would like to see that as well. Thank you, Ms. Mayor.
Thank you, Ms. Margolin.
Thank you. Thank you, Jill, for a great presentation. Two questions. First, a small question. I noticed under the listings for my district that there are two projects under a category called Target Neighborhood, and I had never seen that before and wondered what that is.
A Target Neighborhood project is typically a street reconstruction project for which we don't have a street petition. And so it is a project that we, the city, are initiating because the citizens themselves haven't initiated. And that's what it is in general. And many of you have Target Neighborhood projects, but that's what it is in general.
Okay. I guess I initiated it. So I'm not sure how to initiate it. Okay. And then on the North Haven Trail extension, I'm disappointed to see that the construction is not supposed to take place until 2016. I don't know what can be done about that, but I am concerned because we have an agreement for matching funds from the county, and I want to make sure that over this long time period we don't lose track of that and that money disappear. So since I'm not going to be here to oversee it, I want to make sure that staff and whoever my successor is are very well aware that matching fund is there, and it will need to
work.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Collins. Ms. Davis.
Thank you so much. Jill, I have one or two questions I want to ask. The old bonds, I think you had the 93 bond and the 2006 bond.
Oh, 06.
How do you know when those things have been completed?
We would run a report for you to tell you that.
Okay, would you please?
Okay.
The other thing, sidewalks, and I know we put any, we did some sidewalks in some of our districts. Areas that still need sidewalk improvements, or we're just going to kind of hold off on those until the next bond?
Well, it depends upon what kind of sidewalk you're talking about. We have about $1.5 million for the kind of sidewalks that are the 50-50 cost split, and that's open to people all around the city, and we've got that scheduled for the first 3 years of the bond program.
And those individuals who paid as well.
Right.
That was on in 2012, right?
It's been a program we've had for many years now.
So those people who did it for the 2012 bond?
Well, they haven't been identified yet. So we keep, generally we'll keep lists of people. When we run out of money, we'll keep the names of people that are interested. More people can come in, and it's first come, first serve. And so every year when we have a pot of money, we kind of put a card for, you know, projects out, and because we have a list of interested people, and we keep names as they call in, we contact and get the next group ready to go out the door.
Okay. I've been with you because there are some parts of that in this Kelly district, it'll be my district next year, in that Bunker Terrace area, to have some sidewalk issues. You and I talked about that a while ago with Mr. Carraway.
Yeah, Mr. Carraway, in his, he has specific money for sidewalks in District 4. So I don't know if they're in the area he's talking about, but yeah, you have specific money for sidewalks in your district.
I'm asking about the question. I go with Mr. Carraway on that. Let me ask you another question. Now, when we start talking about the new highway construction that's going on around the city, how do we incorporate that into new projects?
What we typically do when we are working with TxDOT and we're planning a bond program, we will look ahead to see, do we need to make improvements in the adjacent streets to make it easier for traffic to get through?
Okay.
And so, for example, when we redid Central Expressway many years ago, we had millions and millions of dollars on the bond program, on the 85 bond program, to work on that and make the streets work better as an alternate route for Central Expressway. For LBJ, we set aside money to do the same kind of thing. Now, in your district, with the SM Wright project, we don't need that because it's covered within the project itself. So
okay.
The way it's staying.
And at Martin Luther King, at the joint station at Martin Luther King, I think that's Harwood, the street, and I think the street department has tried to fix that problem, but it's bumpy. So when it rains, the water levels up. And so, if we can take a look at that it's right in front of that bus station. And I think the street department has fixed it, but it's underneath the street and it's real bumpy. So if we can go out there and take a look at it. Of course, it's not in this particular project, and I looked on the other ones, the 03 and the 06, and I didn't see anything, but it has become a concern. It's very from the bus station. I'll go as far as
he's nodding, and so he's prepared to.
Okay. I'll go as far as on some other small streets or things that I think we need to look at and we go for. These are just very small items. And then the last thing on the reconstruction. Tell me the difference between the resurfacing and the reconstruction of the street.
The resurfacing, we just come in and take the top old layer of asphalt off and put a new layer of asphalt that will be 2 to 3 inches thick. And this is a what we call a ghost failure. So if the road is completely cracked down, they will fix that repair so we don't get a new pothole in the same location. So that's what resurfacing is. Reconstruction, we basically remove everything that's there and put down new. And then depending upon if it's a complete street and reconstruction, we'll get better sidewalks. And so reconstruction, you basically get a new street.
Okay, so that's a whole new street. Okay. And how long do those normally take? Anywhere from 1 or 2 years?
Well, because of reconstruction, we are going to have to design it. Oftentimes, the water department is going to want to redo the water, wastewater lines. They'll evaluate to see if they have old pipes. And so they will get involved, and then the reconstruction will take usually at least a year to do.
And the milk piece in the state. Thomas, how long will that project take?
That will take 4 years, I believe.
Okay. Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Davis. Ms. Rizal.
Thank you. So real quick, I know during the 2006 bond program, we had the, of course, you know, explaining to the public about, you know, capacity and between our debt. So we had percentages, and I remember distinctly that in, we explained that the first round was 7% of the bond, and the next one was 10, and then the next one was 22%. Do we have the percentages in terms of, you know, what we will, the projects that we will do at first, like in terms of, sometimes that really helps the public as we go out, because everybody wants their project to be done first. So once we explain the debt capacity and retain our debt, what, you know, how much, what the percentage will be at the beginning, and then
we can tackle all that for you.
That would really help.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Ms. McDonald. Mr. Cadane.
Thank you, Mayor. Gail, thank you for an excellent report. My question is there any way we can, and I don't know how to ask you to get a info on the 2006 bond. Can we get that for our district and a timeline on anything left there?
Yes.
We can, okay. Mm-hmm. And if there are any, and I don't know how difficult that'd be, any issues prior to 2006, because and then we were speaking about dredging, and there's no dredging involved in this bond. Is that correct?
Which bond?
The current bond, 2012.
Right, we don't have any dredging projects on this bond program.
Okay, so how do we start to get one on?
Is that ever a new bond program?
That's what I'm saying. So
if you have a particular need, so let us visit with you and find out.
Let's do that and see, because we might have.
Okay.
And if that's the case, we might. I know you got to do a bond to get it, but we might find other.
Right. There is a stormwater utility that has some capacity, yeah. So let's find out
if you need it. Okay, we'll call that. Thank you. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you. Any other questions? Discussion? Thank you very much, Bill. Thank you very much, Mary. Before we go into executive session, Ms. Hunt has an announcement.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Colleagues at noon, the folks who put on the St. Patrick's Day Parade are going to be making an announcement up in the flag room. I hope you'll join us. And afterwards, Desperados will be providing us lunch. Thank you, Mayor.
Well, you just helped me. Because Ms. Perkins, we've got about a 30-minute executive session. Okay, why don't we do that? Why don't we recess? Thank you, Ms. Carroll, if I said it right. And then we will come back after the press conference with your plate of food, okay? And let's do our executive session then. We've done all the other business, and we'll take up the public speakers at the end of that. So why don't we say 12:30? That's, you mean in the back room? Okay, we'll just do that. That's good. Yeah. So we'll do the public speakers after. We'll have to come back in to do public speakers here. But that's fine. We'll be in the briefing room at 12:30. That gives them time to do, and we'll take on this. There's a lunch room. The lunch room at what did I say? This is the briefing room. I listened to you, Mr. Cadane. All right. It is. So we all got that clear as mud. It is 11:45 a.m. January 16, 2013. The City Council will now go into closed session under Section 551071 of the Texas Open Meetings Act to receive advice from and consult with the City Attorney on the following matters described in today's agenda. Stacey Williams v. City of Dallas, City of Dallas v. Viceroy Regal LP et al., City of Dallas versus Altec Pipe and Supply 2LP et al. Estimated time 30 minutes. Thank you. It is 1:42 p.m. January 26th. City Council will now go back into open session. We met under Section 551071 of the Texas Open Meetings Act. Received advice from and consulted with the city attorney on the following matters described on the agenda. Casey Williams v. City of Dallas. City of Dallas v. Viceroy Regal LP et al. City of Dallas versus Altec Pipe and Supply 2 LP et al. Thank you. We will listen to our afternoon speakers.
Good afternoon. I would like to speak to guidelines. Citizens and other visitors attending the meeting of the City Council shall observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any person making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks, or who becomes boisterous while addressing the City Council or while attending the City Council meeting shall be removed from the room if the sergeant arms is so directed by the presiding officer. And the person shall be barred from further audience before the City Council during that session of the City Council. Individuals are allowed 3 minutes to speak. Your notice of time is on both walls. When your time is up, please allow the next speaker their turn, and please address all comments to Mayor Rollins. Your first speaker is Karen Moulton. Not present. Ozone Ballant. Not present. William Hopkins. Mr. Hopkins will be followed by Frank Ward, Charles Whitman, and LaCoya London. You may begin.
Oh, go on. Go ahead and press them out. But, you see, that's a, yeah, I'm talking to you, though. Yeah, I'm talking to you.
You may begin. Go ahead.
This is the, when I'm passing out Mayor Rollins, this is the letter the city wrote me in 1997. By middle ways, said the city wasn't involved in the RSR lawsuit. You can read it, and it states that the city wasn't involved, Mayor Rollins. But on the next page, it's a lawsuit where the city of Dallas sued the RSR. The city lied, and told us in 97, Mayor Rollins, that the city wasn't involved, if you can read the lawsuit. In the next page, it has what the city proved. The RSR lady plant, and it was for the residents and the whole community. And we just got a letter from the city, another letter from Scott Green, saying that the city, first they said they didn't have no involvement with this lawsuit. And then after I showed them the lawsuit, we get another letter, Mel Rollins, where the city said they did pregnant women and children. We're still trying to find the, he was going to give us some from the auditor, where the auditor showed where they paid the pregnant women and children. I'm still waiting on that letter. He just going back and forth from you didn't know nothing about it, Mel Rollins, until I filled you the lawsuit. And now you're doing pregnant women and children, and we can't find the pregnant women and children. And the lawsuit, it don't say nothing about Parkland. It don't say nothing about what the county is supposed to do. It don't say nothing about what Parkland is supposed to do. It tells what the city and the state sued for the residents in West Dallas. And I'm just trying to get some help. I gave you the same letter the first day you was on the job when you first got here, Mayor Rollins. And we just sit here and waiting on those blacks to die for y'all to come in with this Trinity River thing. And I'm just trying to get some help. And the Dallas Morning News, they did lead testing in December, and they found high levels of lead in West Dallas. And the EPA said that everything clean and everything fine, but the Dallas Morning News found the high levels of lead in West Dallas, Maryland. And the people still dying, but the city council members just sit here letting the blacks die. And won't say nothing. And they got an x-ray fluorescence where it could show in the bones, Mel Rollins. It could show the lead in the bones with the x-rays. I know y'all finna pay for an x-ray machine to be down here at the city to to do x-rays of the people that's coming into the city probably next week or the week after. But they got an x-ray that shows where the lead is in the people's bones in West Dallas. Mayor Rodgers, it probably cost a little bit more money than the blood testing that they've been doing, lying to the people, saying like it's in your blood, it's not in your blood. Over 20 years, it can't be still in your blood, Mayor Rodgers. And I'm just trying to get some help from you. I gave you the same lawsuit in case they use on the job.
Thank you, Mr. Austin.
Can I get some kind of response from anybody?
Thank you.
No?
Next speaker.
Next speaker is Frank Ward, not present. Paul Goodwin, not present. LaCoya London, not present. Mr. Mayor, this concludes the afternoon speaking.
Thank you. Meeting is adjourned. 1:48 minutes. Thank you.